Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to Blog Talk Radio. This is Dr. John. It's a beautiful, sunny, and warm day here in Pawleys Island, South Carolina. It's just been beautiful weather, and I'll tell you what, we've got a really good show lined up for you tonight. We've got Dave Atwill. Dave is an author. He is from Jacksonville, North Carolina. We met him through Comic-Cons. In fact, he's a good friend of Papa Stro Maestro, who is going to be my co-host tonight as soon as we get started here in just a minute. So we're glad to have Dave with us. He's an author. And I think we met him at Cape Carteret at Mac Daddy's. They have a wonderful, wonderful Comic-Con there. And that was right before the Cape Fear Halloween Comic-Con. And so, as I said, we are certainly glad to have him here with us tonight. And got a lot of great things coming up. So I'll be with you in about 15 seconds, and we'll get going with the show. And hello, hello, this is Dr. John back again. We had a little slight technical glitch, and sorry about that. Dave Atwill, are you there with us tonight?
Yes, sir, I am. I appreciate you having me on.
Well, thank you very much. It's good to have you. Papa Stro Maestro, how are you doing tonight?
Peaches, it's great to be here.
That's great. Yeah, we had a little technical difficulty. Papa Stro, do you ever have those when you do WCW Retro? They seem to be plaguing me here in 2017.
All the time. It never ends.
In any event, Dave, we're glad to have you here. The reason you're here is because we were introduced to you up at Mac Daddy's in Cape Carteret, North Carolina, when we were at that wonderful Comic-Con that they have, and that was right before the Cape Fear Halloween Comic-Con. And first of all, the two of you have known each other for a long, long time, haven't you? Dave, why don't you tell us how you know Papa Stro?
Well, he'll probably deny all of it, and I don't blame him. We're actually old high school friends, so we are both proud White Oak graduates, both Vikings. I have yet to figure out what a Viking has to do with Eastern North Carolina, but nevertheless, we are both proud green and gold White Oak Vikings. And Rob, his folks live not too far from my folks still. And we came up together, and it's just we've lived in this community so far and so long, and we've crossed paths from time to time. But luckily enough, both of our careers have kind of gotten us, you know, intertwined again. And I talked to him so much now, and it's really good getting back in touch with him, because I tell you, if you ever get a chance to meet him, and you'll agree, super great guy, give you the shirt off his back, and if I had to say anything rotten about him, I'd have to stop and think about it. So always good to have him at my back.
Yep, absolutely. I've got to tell you a great story about Papa Stro. He told me, he said, in fact, you, Dave, you're the one that told me. You said that when he was in high school, he kept saying, I am going to be a big professional wrestler. And you and all your friends said, yeah, sure. Well, look what happened. So Papa
yep.
Stro, you proved to them that you could do it. I tell you that. So that was a great thing. Now, Dave, the reason we've got you here is you've got a wonderful series of books, the Hunger series. A lot of people might not know about them. I've got pictures of them on the website, www.comicconstars. I've also got a link to your site on Amazon where people can buy them. Why don't you tell us first, obviously I'm going to ask you to tell us a little bit about each of the three books so we can get a flavor for what goes on, but how did you become a writer? That's always a question I like to ask someone. It's like I've asked Papa Stro many times, well, how did you become a wrestler? And I've heard great stories. So how did you become a writer, and did you really want to be a writer?
The answer to that is pretty much misfortune. What happened is I've always had a knack for writing, always enjoyed writing, even when I was, you know, a kid and everything. Writing stories was never a problem. But as, you know, you get to be an adult and whatnot, and you get into the workforce, and before you know it, the tidal wave of work takes over your life. And, you know, 20, 25, 30 years goes by. So what happened to me is I had the idea for the curse of the hunger, and had it rolling around in my head for quite some time. And I actually bounced it off of two good friends at work, Eric and Kurt. And I had, you know, told those guys, what do you think? I said, am I nuts? And they said, nah, you know, y'all run with this. But when you're working 60 hours a week, you know, it's tough to sit down and do it. So unfortunately, March or better yet, April of 2014, I was part of a workforce reduction and lost my job. So in the time that the severance was going on, I remember, you know, and sometimes things happen for a funny reason. I remember saying, okay, obviously I've been put on this path for a reason, and I can't spend the next 8 months sitting around gaining weight. I need to take this time and spend it wisely. And I sat down and started typing. So, you know, it's kind of funny how it goes like that. From misfortune, you know, comes on to fortune like this. Now, when you speak fortune, it's fortune that I've been able to achieve a dream that I've had, but it's also misfortune because if you write books, you are definitely living below the poverty line. Don't ever quit your day job if you're a writer. That's best advice I give anybody.
Okay. Papa Stro, will you tell people not to quit their day job until they have a gig in wrestling? Would you agree with that one?
Always have a plan B or C or D or E, F. How many plans you got? It never hurts to have a backup plan, especially in this crazy world. Because, you know, it's great to pursue a dream, but bottom line, you got to make a living too and survive.
Yes, you do. Well, Dave, that's a great story, and I like that. What I don't know if either one of you know this. I actually have a novel that I wrote, and I quit a job, and I decided to donate 6 weeks of my life to writing my great American novel. Now, I don't know if it's any good or not. I'm going to get it published one day, but I did have a job coming up the middle of January of that next year, so I made sure I had one. But Dave, I tell you what, I think you've been successful. You go to a lot of events. People love your work. Would you tell everybody, you don't have to give everything away, but tell us a little bit about the premise of the, because we have three books so far, right?
Right, absolutely. And a fourth one is done, just yet to be in print.
Wow, that's great. So tell us what you can about the premise of your three books, your three novels, The Hunger.
Yes, sir. Well, The Hunger itself, it's a curse. And if you can imagine having anything at all, some type of debilitating disease and or, you know, condition, that if somebody was to walk up to you and say, we can fix it, we can keep you alive, but this is what you got to do, and you find out it's the worst possible thing to do, you know, to keep you alive. That's basically what this is. So when you contract the hunger curse, you have to feed once a week, in the ballpark of once a week. And we all know what feeding means. You know, we're going on the zombie culture on this, where you have to feed. You have to feed on human flesh. So, basically, in the event that you do feed once a week, you maintain a great health standard. You're, you know, better presence of mind. You heal faster. You're better resistance to any type of sickness, illness. So, but in the event that you say, "Hey, we're not going to do this," you make the morally sound decision to not live at the expense of other people. You contract what they call the rot, which is basically when you just, for lack of a better term, you rot away. Your muscles atrophy, your senses start going ballistic, and you basically become a shambling corpse until everything just shuts down and you die. And the thing is that it's the most horrible way you could think of going, but it's the most morally sound way of handling the situation. So it really creates a big choice. I mean, the choice you would have to make is just, you know, so dire. So anyhow, the first book starts in the American frontier, and it's surrounded by a family that leaves here, right? As a matter of fact, Swansboro, the area, which is right down the street from Mac Daddy's, and as a matter of fact, not far from Stroh's home. He can actually walk Swansboro if he wants to. But the family was involved in the Civil War. When the dad came back, he was so done with what had happened. And anybody who knows and has read up on the Reconstruction era in the South, it was worse than the war was. So he gave everything away he had, herded his family up into two wagons, and headed out west. And the plan was to go out to Montana territory up around the Bozeman Trail and to start planning again and take advantage of the rumors of the gold rush that was going on in Montana at the time. So when they get up there, they find themselves stuck in a little ghost town, and they feel like they're all alone. The fact is, there's still citizens of that town that are living underground under a saloon and inn that are hiding from this curse. So it goes through that. The first two books are actually, you know, set in the Western frontier and everything with your gunslingers and horses and whatnot. But then somebody does something really messed up in that second book, and he has to get out of Dodge. And he winds up showing up in the third book in London Harbor. And we find out that the hunger curse is actually behind the Jack the Ripper slayings. So ultimately, wow, what will happen is this curse winds its way through history, and it will exploit certain periods of, how do you want to say it, where you can use a conspiracy theory. So I've got plans for it to wind through. Rasputin is the next guy I'm going to get into. And it will actually tie into World War II. And then I've also got plans for it to tie into modern day along with the Norse period. So there's a lot to go. And as long as folks are reading, I'll keep writing. But there's so much room to play with this, and I'm having a blast writing it.
Well, that's great. All right, now I want to stop and ask both of you a question. Dave, I'm going to take you first. I think the only thing that I like better than Comic-Con stars and watching wrestling, which is truly one of my favorite things in the world to do, is conspiracy theories. Dave, what is your favorite conspiracy theory, or have you heard a new one recently that you would like to share? And Papa Stroh, I'll ask you that one next, and then I've got a new one because I found one last night at 1:25 a.m. So, Dave, tell us your favorite conspiracy theory.
I got to tell you, hands down, now I don't know if I can actually twist the hunger into this or not, but my favorite one, easy, is the Kennedys. These guys, you've got to look at it, the whole Marilyn Monroe thing, she was vapor locking. She was, for lack of a better term, she was somewhat of a basket case. So everybody knew that. And she started running her mouth, started saying, hey, I'm going to tell everybody, and then boom, she ends up dead. They say she accidentally overdosed, she committed suicide, but yet she had no pills in her stomach, there was no water in the room. According to the autopsy report, the amount of drugs she would have taken would have not metabolized in that short amount of time when they found her. Back onto that, Kennedy himself is assassination. You have got to wonder, I know they got Oswald up there and 99% of everything says it was Oswald, but you have got to wonder, by the way, bullet trajectories and everything else with all, and let's not even forget that Dad Kennedy was a rum runner. So I'm sure he had his bevy of enemies, so whether it was corrupt or not, hey, so be it. but they had their hands in everything. And when you're like that, you can't help but make somebody mad. So, yeah, there's a compelling, tons of compelling twists with that crowd. Easy.
Okay. Well, now let me ask you a quick question about the Kennedy assassination and see if you know the answer. I'm looking for some answers on a new conspiracy theory I found. First of all, and Papa Stroh, I'm going to ask you because we talked about it one night. Dave, how many seats were in the limousine that John Kennedy was riding in? Was it three rows or was it two like a standard car?
I believe it was two because Connolly was sitting up front, was he not?
Well, we think so. We think so. Now, Papa Stroh, before you give us your favorite conspiracy theory, do you mind reminding us about the video you saw online one night?
You know, I was going to bring that up to you, Dave. Dr. John and I talked a lot of the week prior.
I saw a video. They were doing a documentary on the assassination of John F. Kennedy, and where they slow-mo'd the video, right? And you could see someone from the back seat shooting Kennedy, right? And you see the lady turn her head, you know, when it happened. And it was just surreal. It's like, you know, the whole time, you know, the whole story about him being assassinated from afar and stuff. But when you showed the video, it was someone from the very back seat shooting Kennedy. It was just crazy.
I mean, just the shot. Yeah, the shot in itself. And I guess the part that's always gotten me kind of questioning is the way that Kennedy's head snapped back. How true was that to the direction from Oswald was at, if you understand my meaning? So
right.
if I was to punch you in the face coming from the right side, your face is going to move to my left.
Yes.
Yeah, that's why, you know what I mean? If you're fighting a southpaw boxer, you got to protect your other side. You know what I mean? That's what makes fighting southpaw so tough. So obviously, if his head snaps in a certain direction, you would think that the shot came from that direction or the opposite direction. And I don't know, the whole thing seems so strange. And it seems like nobody has it. And even the post side of it, when it comes down to how they handled his body afterwards, where they didn't let Jackie anywhere near his body. It's like, huh? You know what I mean? It's almost as if,
right.
And then, you know, when you throw J. Edgar Hoover in there and you find out what an oddball he was,
right.
You can't really put anything past him because he's another guy who had his grudges, had his vindictions, and also had his hands in everything. So you can't help but scratch your head, even though, you know, like I said, 99% of the way, you got to say it was Oswald. But on the flip side, there's that little 1% just has you going, man.
Because, you know, John F. Kennedy, much like the way Trump is now, was talking back then against the establishment, if you recall in the speeches.
Right.
And you can't help but think maybe he made someone of the elite at that time pretty upset.
Exactly. And, you know, it goes back to what I was saying about Monroe. You know, she starts saying, hey, I'm going to tell somebody and I'm going to run my mouth. And it doesn't matter if you're at the workplace or dealing with famous people or in the mob or whatever. The minute you start talking like that, people immediately put you on a different scale. And and let's just say, to play, you know, play the what if card, let's say she lived. God knows what would have come out of her mouth, and then you have to decipher what is madness, because, I mean, it's coming out of Marilyn Monroe, and then what is truth.
Can you imagine?
Yeah, there's no telling.
One could only imagine. Now, I'm going to tie two stories together with an amazing new conspiracy theory. Dave, you said that you believed he was riding in a car with a standard front seat and a back seat, right?
Right.
Okay, and there are pictures of that.
Right.
But now, Papa Stroh, you gave a contradictory story, and this is what I want to bring out. You said that someone came from the back seat and shot Kennedy, or at least that's what the video showed, right?
Yeah, it just blew my mind. Right.
But what I'm saying is you saw a video with three rows of seats. Didn't you, maybe?
Maybe.
Maybe.
Couldn't quite make it. I was a three-seater or vice versa.
Yeah, a three-seater. Well, now, and there's a reason I bring that up. Have either of you heard, are you familiar with Nelson Mandela?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
The president, the past president of South Africa, the great leader. There is something called the Mandela effect. Have either one of you heard of it?
No. What is that?
Well, vaguely.
It's
not,
really,
not in detail.
It has just surfaced. And what it's about is that in the last 4 to 5 years, there have been some changes that have been very hard to detect, but there are certain changes that have gone on. First of all, certain brand names and certain book titles are now misspelled to what we remember them. How many of you remember the very, very famous hot dog that every kid wanted to be? What was it called, Dave?
Oscar Mayer.
That's right. Papa Stroh, how do you spell Oscar Mayer? You're a smart wrestler. I know you know that.
last I checked, it was spelled as O-S-C-A-R.
Oh, God, I feel like I'm singing the song.
Oh, my goodness. What, I
think they changed their name, or what's happened?
No, I think you're getting it. It's O-S-C-A-R.
Yeah.
And then how do you spell
M-A-Y-E-R, right?
Yeah, my baloney has the first name. Yeah.
That's right.
It's like, you know, M-I-C-K-E-Y-M-O-U-S-C, right? Like Musketeers.
That's right.
Yeah, I was rolling that one, too. That one was rolling through my head. I almost had Oscar Mouse going there.
Except, why is there evidence that many places Oscar Mayer is spelled M-E-Y-E-R? And there are lots of mementos and things like that from before the 60s where it's spelled differently. And book titles, there's evidence people can show me, and I've seen it on YouTube. It's interesting. We love conspiracy theories, whether they're right or not, they're fun. But it seems as though there are some contradictions. And the most interesting one that I found, and then I'll tell you what the whole point of it is. What happened was a girl was at Dragon Con in 2010, and she was talking to a friend of hers about the unfortunate death of Nelson Mandela in 1991 and how she had seen his widow give a speech on television, and she had seen she remembers seeing the funeral on television. Nelson Mandela never died, but it seems like a whole lot of people.
He wasn't dead in 91.
Do what?
Yeah, he wasn't dead in 91.
No, but there are a lot of people who remember seeing his funeral broadcast on television. What an odd state of affairs there. So the point is, it seems as though some of our history has been rewritten. We know Nelson Mandela, he died, what, about maybe 3 or 4 years ago?
Yeah, it hadn't been that long.
Right. Well, what happens is it seems like, and I love this conspiracy theory, so don't shoot me, but it seems as though they have decided that our world ended in 2012, and we really did get hit by some object from space. And what happened was we were shifted to another reality, which was as close as they could get to the one that we had. But there are some changes and there's some inconsistencies. But one that keeps coming up is the Kennedy thing. I've had several people say that they've seen the video now, Papa Stroh, where Kennedy was shot from someone in the back seat saying that there were three rows of seats in the car. Dave, I know for a fact right now there's a picture in the Kennedy Museum. There are two rows of seats in that car. So there are people that have seen two different cars. And the other one, here's a geography question. How many of you remember the Western Hemisphere, which is North America and South America? We all remember studying that in school, don't we, Papa Stroh?
Absolutely.
Okay. Now, I'm going to ask you, Dave, you think of your answer to the question, and then I'll count on you to be honest. And Papa Stroh, you know North America and South America. Where is South America in relation to North America? Is it below it, to the left of it, or to the right of it as you're looking at the globe?
Where's South America?
Yeah, is it directly below North America, to the left, or to the right, if you were looking at the globe?
Ah.
What do you remember?
If you're looking at the globe, it's more like southeast of North America.
Yeah, at
just
a 4 o'clock position, so to speak. Yeah, because Brazil is actually further east than, say, Maine is.
Right.
If you go on the latitude, longitude type thing, yeah.
All right. Well, it's very interesting that that's what the map shows today. I've asked three friends of mine to draw the relationship between North America and South America, and they always put South America directly under North America. The Parker Brothers game Risk, I found a 1957 copy of that game, and it shows South America directly under North America. And I know that in my geography books, it showed South America directly under North America. So there are, if you look hard enough, you'll find consistency. So all I've got to say is that is one of the most enjoyable conspiracy theories that I have heard in a long time. And if you go online, it's called the Mandela Effect. And it's really interesting. So there you go. There's my new conspiracy theory.
The Kennedys even moved South America. I told you those guys had some power.
Right?
They moved continents. That's how bad they were.
They were powerful. We don't necessarily say that people were bad now, Dave, but we
bad like in a cool bad, not like a bad evil bad, but you understand.
Pardon me. They were badass, weren't they?
Oh my goodness.
Okay. All right. Enough of my crazy conspiracy theories. I like it when I get friends on this show, that people that I know well, and I can talk about my crazy fun stuff. That's now you know what I do at 1:30 in the morning. I mean, you know, you have a long hard day at the internet, and you know, you just got to find the latest conspiracy theory because they're just a lot of fun.
I've got one for you.
Oh,
I
good
got one for you. The Bermuda Triangle.
Oh yeah.
Yeah,
that's a good
all those ships and planes disappearing and no trace in sight. You know, I think, you know, if you want to tie in something else, another conspiracy there on top of that is tying that in with what goes on at the bottom of the ocean in the deep sea, right? And, you know, and they're finding out more and more about all these unidentified species that are coming to the surface that,
oh, yeah,
you know, we never seen before. And, you know, it's like they're finding more and more of them all the time. So, I mean, we just don't really know. There could be a whole new universe on the bottom of the ocean we don't know about.
Yeah,
that's
there's
right.
No
and
telling
not
what's floating around down there.
Yeah.
That's exactly right. And, you know, as much as conspiracy theories sound crazy, they're not always crazy, because where there is smoke, there is some fire. Now, we don't know exactly what kind of fire it is, but there's always just a little bit of fire somewhere. Now, about
it's just
the
like,
Hunger
if you guys
Day,
seen a movie called The Abyss, have you guys seen the movie called The Abyss?
Yeah,
talk about it, because my buddy Earl Owensby filmed it.
Mm-hmm. When they discovered aliens at the bottom of the ocean, right?
Well, unusual about
how
that?
How do we know it's not there? Yeah, it could be,
right?
You know,
and when you tie it in with the whole Bermuda Triangle thing, I mean, it could be like one big portal. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you never can tell. I mean, and we'll never know.
Right. But it just gets you to thinking at times, you know.
The funny thing is when I was writing the Jack the Ripper book, the biggest concern I had when I was writing that book was somebody with nothing else better to do to eat the book up, you know, factually. Ah, well, that guy wasn't doing this,
right,
and that guy wasn't doing that. So I tried to cut it all off at the pass, and I did a ton of research on the case. And, you know, we all know the basics behind it. You know, victims were horribly mutilated and yada, yada. And we've seen movies and TV shows and whatnot on it. But what I didn't realize, the living standard in Whitechapel. Now, we're talking 1888, which is what, a mere, you know, 120, 130 years ago. The living standard was absolutely abysmal. I mean, people couldn't afford to inter dead relatives, so they just left them in the house.
Huh.
You just sit them in the corner and just let them sit. So there was so much of that going on. There was so much, there were so many shadows, and I've seen actual footage where they take guys that are, you know, 350-pound guys, and they put him in a gray jacket and a hat, and he stands in a spot, and you can see him, and he takes one step back, you can't see him anymore. So who knows, you know what I mean? And with all the alleyways and the drunkenness and, you know, the prostitution alone, you know, of course, you know, the system on the prostitutes, you get the prostitute, you don't, just don't go right out there in the middle of the mall and knock it on out. You got to go somewhere, you know, somewhat secluded, which is what? An alleyway. And there goes your shadows. There goes your 350-pound guy that disappears. So, so much that went into that. And as I was, and I'll go on and tell you, when I was doing it, the writing of that book messed me up bad because it was such a down time that I just got this real brooding, nothing is good thing going on in my head. And if you read Ripper, there's no good guys in that book either. Everybody in that book is a dirtbag. Some are more
psychopaths.
Bigger dirtbags than the other one. Yeah. So, but, man, what a downtime in history. So, and then the bad news is that historically speaking, we look at the police system there, you know, as a bunch of bumbling fools that couldn't catch this guy. No, those guys did everything they could to track down this killer. So all the different theories of, you know, it was some, you know, prince that was connected with royalty or, you know, some doctor, or there was even theories that it was a woman or whatnot. Any one of them can fly. You know, there's no way of saying that one of them's wrong, one of them's right, because any one of them could possibly be there. And that was one of the big things with going after that and stepping out of my comfort zone, which, of course, is gunslingers things. We all like Westerns, at least as I do. But that was my first step out of the box for me when it comes down to moving the curse around. And what a compelling place to go, you know what I mean? And still to this day, you got to scratch your head. If you actually do some digging into the case, it's there's no telling. It could have been anyone. So, yeah, conspiracy theories, you can't help but wrap your hands around. As a matter of fact, we watch that Curse of Oak Island every week. Those guys have been digging for 4 or 5 seasons now and still ain't found anything. But, yeah, every week I sit there and watch. Again,
tremendous.
Compelling, you know.
You know, we're on the subject, back on the topic about illusion, you know what I mean, of how these killers can, like you said, kind of mirage themselves, you know what I mean? Like the 300-pounder, right? And with illusions and like portals and all that. And it's just like, have you guys seen Escape from the Planet of the Apes, where the scientist was explaining about time travel, and he was showing the picture that was inside of a picture that was inside of a picture, You know?
Yeah.
I mean, it's amazing how you can what you can do to train the mind and how you can camouflage things and kind of distort things and all that just by a mental picture. You know what I mean? It's just it's all connected.
You know, it's certainly is. And Papa Stro, you're one, because of your wrestling background and all the mixed martial arts that you've done, you've had to do a lot of training of your mind, and you've had to learn to see things and see opponents really how they are, haven't you?
Yeah, a lot. Most 85% of what we do is psychology. You know, we have to master a mind and then master a body. To keep our body fit, to have a good mind, you know. So, especially when you're going out there, and what we're doing is just like what Dave does. We're telling a story, you know. Everything, life is a story, you know. Or, you know, is what we do. We have a beginning, a middle, and an end. You know what I mean? And some people have their endings in different ways more than others, but I mean, it's all the same. I mean, life is so like history. Like we're just talking about history. It's all intertwined. You know what I mean? We're life and history, it's all one big storybook. And yep. And we pretty much write the chapters ourselves.
That's why I could never understand
when people say they're not any good in history, you know, when they're in school, I don't like history. It's nothing but a big story. I mean, it's not like science where you got to remember the value of boron and all that kind of garbage. Hey, it's a story, and it's nothing more than reading any other book you've ever read or watching any movie or television thing. It's a story. And, you know, like Stro was saying, you just continue every day. We put another layer on it. So, yeah, it doesn't stop. And I don't see why anybody couldn't be interested in history, to be honest with you. There's just so many lessons there to live by. But you know,
really,
that's the reason why I was wanting to tackle the Rasputin thing next, because really Rasputin's another one of those question marks. I mean, they shot the guy, they stabbed the guy, they drowned him, they poisoned him. I mean, they did everything except for shoot him off into outer space, and he still lived. How did he do it? None of us really know. So why not find out that the hunger curse was behind his ability to continue on? Ta-da. Mm-hmm. How you like that for an intro?
That's
great.
Pretty awesome.
I mean, unless
it kind of reminded me when they
unless he was Michael Myers, you know?
That movie with Judas. Remember, I think it was Dracula 2000 or something. I don't know if you've seen it, where at the end it showed who Dracula really was. Or where it came from, and it was remembering, like, Judas was the guy that betrayed Jesus in the Bible.
Right.
and it all came down to Dracula had some kind of connection. You know what I mean? It just freaked me out. You know, watching that movie. But I mean, you're right. I mean, like Rasputin, yeah, it immediately makes you think.
Yeah, there's
so many
plot
holes
in life. Yeah, Andre. Now he would have drank away he would have drank away the hunger easy. The hunger wouldn't have been able to handle his two cases an hour habit. All the stories about him. I have yet to hear a bad story about Andre, though. All the stories I hear are just awesome.
Andre's the man.
Now Stro, got to ask you: Did Andre have a two case an hour deal?
Oh, yes, and then some. I mean, the boy could eat. And he loved his wine because he was French. And thank God he was a nice guy, because he was the only individual I ever met in my entire life where I felt that low in the food chain. I thought he was going to eat me, seriously. If it weren't for Dusty Rhodes, I would have ran like hell.
Wow.
I still miss the dream, man.
Yeah, the dream, man.
There should be a national day of mourning every year for the day he passed. I mean, it's
Oh, my God.
I usually don't get shook up when guys, you know, when celebs die and that kind of stuff because, you know, for crying out loud, what do they got to do with me? But when Dusty slipped away, that was one of those ones where it's kind of like the day when Rodney Dangerfield died. You just kind of had that.
Yeah.
You know, shucks, man, you know. Now, when Ric Flair dies, I'm just going to have to call out that day. I'm going to be inconsolable.
No doubt.
I remember Banana Jack, who he broadcasts Comic-Con Stars on WLSC AM. He said that he was talking with his, I think, 11-year-old son about wrestling. And his son said, "Dad, you talk about it, but I've never seen it." And he said, "Sir, talking to his son, you come and sit down right now." And they got on YouTube. And what Jack did is he showed him about 2 hours of Ric Flair. So Jack's wife comes in. And Tristan, his son, lets out the big yell that Ric Flair used to do. And she said, "Oh, don't tell me that you've now introduced him to wrestling. Now they're both, now he's a big wrestling fan. You know, Ric Flair is just magnetic." And he really
That's
is.
Awesome.
Stro, have you ever wrestled Ric Flair? I bet you have.
Oh, my God, many times. And many stories about, with Ric, too. Oh, my God. There was one time. I'm driving on I-85 going through Charlotte, right? And this is guy that in another lane that kept swerving me over, right? And kept doing it over and over. I was getting a little heated. And I had to look to see who it was, and I didn't recognize the driver. Then I slowly looked at the back seat, and there's Ric Flair laughing at me, waving at me, right? Oh, my God. You jerk. And Yeah, Ric was cool. He was always a great guy. We used to get Stairmaster contests in the gym and together, and always a classy guy. I mean, he would tell me stories and, you know, and events and everything, and just very, very nice, very, very classy guy. He always has been.
Yeah, every time I've met him,
he's been
beyond personable. Yeah, absolutely.
So now, Dave, getting back to Rasputin, when is that? Is Rasputin going to be in your fourth and upcoming book, or is that in a fifth book that's coming out a little bit later?
Actually, if everything and, you know, nothing is what it is when it comes down to the writing business, the fourth book will actually go back to the frontier and pick up where the second book had left off. That book, the whole frontier scene will actually probably last 5 books altogether. The Jack the Ripper, of course, was a standalone book. The next book I have planned after that, the fifth one will likelihood, fourth one will be in the frontier. Fifth one will probably be in the frontier. If not, it'll be a book that I'm going to call Creep. And that actually is, if you could think of the biggest jerk you've ever worked with in your life, it's going to be around this guy, and he contracts the hunger, and this guy has to find a way to feed. So he feeds, and eventually he'll be caught and incarcerated, and the story then will pick up from the point of view of the doctor at the prison as he begins to contract the rot. So by the time the book is done, it will almost be the textbook instruction manual guide for the Curse of the Hunger. And that'll be a standalone book. And then after that, I will probably go, I have to really wrap up the Frontier series before I go into the Rasputin, because believe it or not, it will actually tie in to the Rasputin era. So, you know, certain twists and turns and whatnot will actually, can't give too much away, but it will tangle into the Rasputin thing eventually. So I got to finish off the one story before I lead into the next, but I'm really looking forward to writing that one, because he's another just compelling individual in history, and man, the possibilities, you know.
Exactly. Well, let me ask you this. When do you think you'll have your fourth book out? I'm asking for a reason.
Oh, okay. Well, I was actually hoping last year all jokes aside, I guess I shouldn't even throw that snipe out there, but would have a little issue with former publisher. And between the ending things with them and the limbo that you're in while you're getting all your rights back and all your work sent back to you, and then moving on to the next publisher, which is House Crimson Publishing, and that's where you could find the book the easiest. You can just housecrimsonpublishing.com, little plug there for the company. Nothing wrong with a little shameless promotion. But they're picking up right there, and I think here in February we're just going to really hit the ground running now that the Christmas season's over with and everybody's back into kind of normal form. And we're going to go ahead and get that fourth book turned loose, and I'd really like to have it ready to go and out there before April. Reason being is con season, you know, kicks up in May, and I'll all likelihood turn up in Myrtle Beach down there for XCon, and that would really, I'm really wanting that to be my launching pad for the season. So, yeah, I'm gonna say Easter. How's that?
Okay. Well, I tell you what, I would like to extend the offer that Comic-Con Stars will throw a book signing party for you at Grace on Second in Wilmington. So, can
well,
we talk
awesome.
About that and set us up a date?
Absolutely. That would be great.
That'd be awesome.
All right, Papa Stroh, will you co-host it with me?
I'd be honored. That'd be wonderful.
Oh, I think that would be great. You know, we've got a lot of friends in the Wilmington area, and we can get J.D. Hill Photography there. They do such wonderful work, and a number of other folks. So we'll see if we can't have us a book signing party. I'll coordinate that with you, and we'll, of course, promote that and announce it here on Comic-Con Stars as well as on all of our Facebook pages. So I think that'll be a lot of fun. Well, now, I have learned something from Papa Stroh. All right, Dave, what have you got that you would like to plug as we start riding into the sunset of this Comic-Con Stars? What do you want to plug with us and our audience?
Oh, well, to be honest with you, two of the best run cons you will ever go to and the most personal, best experience, I got to tell you, the Cape Fear Con that we just did in Wilmington together, and then, of course, Crystal Coast Con, like you spoke of, and Mac Daddy's. If you go to the cons, if you go to the Wizard World cons and whatnot, yeah, they got the big guys there. You know, they got your Shatners there, and they've got your Doctor Who guys and all those out there. But you're almost on a conveyor belt, and it's you go there, you get in line, they're standing behind a table. And now, don't get me wrong, I met a lot of these guys, shook hands with Shatner and Adam West, Burt Ward, had the time of my life. But when you go up there, it's hand them the money, shake their hand, what's your name? My name's Dave. They sign it. Okay, good luck. And you're passed on. The experience lasts 30 seconds. Whereas when you go to these shows, you know, like Cape Fear Show and like Crystal Coast Con, you can actually stop and shoot the breeze with these guys. And not only do they talk to you, but they talk to your family. And it's not just getting the autograph and shaking a hand and taking a selfie. It's an experience. It's actually getting a chance to get to know these guys and everything. And it's just a lot of fun. And coming from, and I'm sure Stroh will agree, when you do these shows, it's absolute crapshoot sometimes what's going to happen. Whether everything's right, whether they've got you, you know, they've got you stashed way off in Outer Mongolia somewhere where nobody comes by. I got to tell you, both of those shows are very, very well ran. And it is very nice, you know, because when I go there, I've got to worry about selling books. That's my thing. I got to worry about Dave when I get there. I don't have time to go, okay, the guy doesn't have my table here. You know what I mean? I have to get in there and hit the ground running. And both of those shows, very, very well ran on both sides of the table. being a guest and being an attendee, I would suggest them to anyone.
Well, thank you. And I will tell you this. Tomorrow, I'm securing the new date for the Cape Fear Comic Con. We are moving probably to August based on the Comic Con calendar. And cool. I will be talking to, of course, our star Papastro Maestro. We've got to check some dates with him tomorrow, and then we're going to be securing the date. We'll have a big announcement this weekend on the new date for the Cape Fear Comic Con. So, Dave, thank you very much, and it's been great having
Absolutely.
You here. Now, Papastro, what do you have to share with us and to promote?
Well, I'm going to be on set this Saturday for the Junkie King. And Checkpoint was just premiered in Vegas this past week with myself, Bill Goldberg, rather, William Forsythe, Kenny Johnson, and Fred Williamson.
Yep.
It will also it's also going to be out in theaters. I'd say either the end of this month, beginning of next month or so, and it's supposed to be out on Netflix in March. So be on the lookout for Checkpoint on that. And see what else. Oh, yeah. The 28th.
Hey, is Fred Williamson not the coolest guy?
Oh, he's tremendous. He's a super
awesome.
Cool dude.
Great guy.
He really is. And funny, too.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Funny guy. And on the 28th, I'll be joining Dr. John at Charlotte MiniCon 40 at the Grady Cole Center in Charlotte, North Carolina. And then that night we're going to go see Jake Snake Roberts and Y2 Kool-Aid at Reggie's on 42nd Street in Wilmington, North Carolina for that great event. And February 4th, I'm wrestling the Barbarian again at Kinston, North Carolina at the Salvation Army building for High Volume Pro Wrestling. We'll be there, Matt Hardy, C.W. Anderson. I think Ivan Koloff's going to be there too. It's going to be a lot of stars on tap for that event as well. So, yeah, from all the more info on all those appearances, just go to my official website, thestro.com, for more info.
Well, that sounds good. And I will say this to you, Papastro. When you find out when Checkpoint comes out in the Wilmington area, let me know, and we'll all have a movie night there wherever it's premiering in Wilmington. Does that sound like a good idea?
If you like action military films, that's the movie to watch. Lots of it.
Well, good. And, Dave, we'll certainly let you know about it, and hopefully you can drop down from Jacksonville and join us. And hopefully our buddies from the Hardwire Tattoo and from the Museum of the Bizarre and friends from Grace on Second will probably grab a burger after the premiere of Checkpoint. So that'll be a fun night. It really will.
Certainly, certainly. And you know, my wife and I were discussing actually making it a weekend getaway, so we'll be down there hanging out with you guys, and I won't have to rush off like I did at the Cape Fear show. We'll be able to hang out and enjoy the evening.
Oh, that's awesome.
All right. Well, that sounds good. Now, I've got something to plug, and Dave, you need to listen to this carefully. Next week,
okay.
9 p.m. on Comic-Con Stars is Papa Stroh's birthday party.
Oh yeah.
Dave. Dave, can I got some surprises lined up for you, Papa Stroh. Dave, can you call in sometime between 9 and 10 and wish him a happy birthday?
Oh, I'd be tickled to death.
Oh my goodness. I can't believe I forgot my own birthday. But in the plugs. Go figure.
Yep.
Hey, but you're still younger than I am, Junior. You ought to be
party.
Smiling.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Yeah.
And you know, the darnest thing about it is that he hadn't got one gray in his head, and if he does, he's hiding it well. Me, I'm sitting here just going to pieces, and this guy looks like the same way he did in high school. He ought to be ashamed of himself.
Oh, my goodness.
I just tell people I'm 147 because I got some gray hair, and then I don't have to worry about it, you know? Then that way I look pretty good.
Look good for 147, yeah.
I look great for 147. I do. But anyway, gentlemen, thank you so much for being with us on tonight's Comic-Con Stars. It was a blast, as usual. I will be checking with each of you soon on some dates to get our promo events ready for the book signing for Dave Atwell and Papa Stroh's birthday party, and also Papa Stroh's premiere of Checkpoint. That's going to be a lot of fun. I will be out with Papa Stroh, as he said, at the Charlotte Minicon at Reggie's on 42nd Street that night. And then I will be up in Kinston, and we'll probably all go have a burger after that, and I'll let everyone know, and hopefully people can join us. So it'll be a lot of fun. Everybody, thanks a lot for being on Comic-Con Stars. It was about the most fun I can have on a Thursday night, for sure, conspiracy theories and all. So let's all stay alive, and I'll see both of you next week for Papa Stroh's birthday party. Have a good one.
Thanks, sir. You do the same. I appreciate the invite.
You're welcome.
Love you, bro.
See you, Papa Stroh.
Love you right back, brother.